Monday, May 4th, from Toronto, Canada, Bromo Seltzer brings you Vox Pop, the voice of the people, conducted by Parks Johnson and his guest partner, Warren Hall. Tonight, Vox Pop is broadcasting direct from the main training center of the Royal Norwegian Air Force, Little Norway, in the province of Ontario. In the next half hour, you'll meet gallant Norwegian patriots who've escaped from their overrun and persecuted native land. These modern young Vikings have come here to train for the day when they and their comrades of the United Nations can free their beloved Norway from the Nazi yoke.
Yes, sir, Warren. All for Norway, eh?
All for Norway. That's right, Parks. That's the English for it. And we're all for them, aren't we?
You bet. All for Norway tonight.
Who do you have first, Parks?
All right, Warren, the first is an American who was a flying captain for Uncle Sam in World War No. 1. And he now wears the wings of three additional countries. He's the only American ever to hold a commission in the Norwegian Army, Navy, or Air Force. Folks, Captain Alec McLeod. Captain, we're glad to... glad to open Vox Pop with you tonight. You have fought in several wars, haven't you?
Yes, it's true. The fact of the matter is, it's often said, wherever there's a war, you'll find two men there on the first day.
Who's that?
H.R. Knickerbocker and McLeod.
Well, I know I've heard about you a lot. Captain, tell me, why did you join the Norwegian Air Force?
Well, I tell you, that's a great, deep secret with me.
A deep secret?
Really, I
can't. Well, I'm going to take our Vox Pop audience and our confidence on that a little bit, because I happen to know that you could have had any number of very high-paying jobs in many, many places, but that you chose to put your talents to use where it could be of real and immediate and great good. You deliberately chose it yourself, and I want the folks to know that. Tell me, just what is this Little Norway, Captain?
Well, really, Little Norway is one of the few spots on this war-torn globe. One finds a true picture of Norwegian life outside of Norway. The camp life is run according to new Norwegian military regulations, and their language, their food, their sports, and the daily routine is carried on as it is in Norway.
Hey, Captain, I've never been in Norway, but we were in Little Norway Saturday and again Sunday, and I tell you, it did feel very, very good. You helped build Little Norway. What kind of men do you train there?
The most marvelous men I've ever had anything to do with in war.
What kind of training do we give them?
We give them the usual training that's given to all pilots, military pilots and mechanics. But then we give them a little bit more, a little plus.
How come this plus?
Well, due to the fact we have only a limited amount of men, we must produce quality. Disregard quantity.
I see. Every man has got to be as near perfect as you can make him. Is that right?
It is.
In the last year and a half, Captain, you've turned out many, many squadrons from Little Norway here. What are your Norwegian pilots doing overseas?
Well, our coastal patrol squadrons now operating in the North Seas are bringing terror to the hearts of the enemy. As did the Vikings of centuries ago who ruled the same seas. Then we have also other squadrons with the RAF who have won their spurs. The British admire them for the bravery.
And so do we all, Captain. Tell me this. Do you speak Norwegian?
I admit I do not.
Oh, you don't speak it. Well, how do the men understand your orders?
I handle all the military commands in Norwegian. Uh-huh. But for general conversation, I use English.
All the rest of them know it. All right, well, Captain, we're awfully happy to have had you up here with us on Vox Pop tonight. And right here, we usually give a little gift from Bromo Seltzer. But as you probably know, all the men of Little Norway ask that tonight we don't do that, but that we handle the matter in an entirely different way. We're not going to tell you just now what that way is, but we will later in the program. And thank you very much, Captain McLeod. Glad to have had you. We have another young Norwegian at our microphone, but before we talk to him, let's switch back to the United States, where Ernest Chappell has some sound advice for us.
Friends, These are nerve-wracking days for most of us, with no time to spare for sickness. When even one man loses 1 hour, it means more than loss of pay. It may mean that America's war effort has been slowed up at some vital point. So don't let a common sick headache rob you of your efficiency. When you have headaches and your stomach's upset and your nerves are all on edge, do as Williams do. Take a Bromo Seltzer. Remember, Bromo Seltzer, unlike many headache preparations, acts not one, but three ways. Not only do you get quick relief from the pain of the headache, Bromo Seltzer also helps calm jumpy nerves. Yes, and it helps settle upset stomachs. You get effective relief. Quickly feel more like your old self again. Of course, if you have persistent and recurring headaches, you should see your doctor. But the next time you get a common sick headache, take my advice. Try Bromo Seltzer. See what a difference it makes when you fight headache not one, but three ways. Okay, Fox, go ahead, Canada.
Okay, Warren, bring on our first Norwegian, will you?
Thank you, Fox. Thank you very much. And boy, am I proud to be with these fellows tonight. Standing here beside me is a great big strapping fellow, about 23. His name, for the purposes of this program, is Olaf. You understand that we can't tell their real names for fear of reprisals against their families in Norway. So this is Ola. As I said, he's a big, good-looking, strapping blonde. Almost all of you fellas. Almost all of you fellas are big, good-looking, strapping blondes. How do you do it? No, you can't answer that. What were you doing in Norway before the war, Ola?
I was in school. I studied chemistry.
Now, we know that all of you boys escaped after the German occupation. Will you tell us about your escape? How did you get away?
Oh, I got away a useful way, like most of Norwegian boys start, over the North Sea in a little fishing boat.
Well, did you make England all right?
No, not the first time.
What happened?
Oh, we were discovered by a German airplane. It started a machine gun, so we had to turn towards the Norwegian coast again.
Well, did you make that all right?
Oh, yes, it was lucky, and we hid the boat and hid ourselves up in the mountains.
How long did you hide in the mountains?
Oh, for about 10 days. Till we got through that. Was no fear longer. And they had made arranged so we could get out in a new boat.
Oh, and then you made it all right that time?
Yes, it was lucky the second time.
You're a very lucky fellow. Say, they tell me, and I read in the papers too, that you did a little ski jumping this last winter.
Yes, I did some down in the United States.
How did you come out the first time?
Not so very well. I come out 7th.
Well, how long since you'd been on skis at that time?
Oh, it was almost 1.5 years then.
Well, you're lucky that you could stand up. is it the same as learning to ride a bicycle? You know, we say once you learn to ride a bicycle, you'll never forget it. Is it the same with learning to ski jump?
Yes, I think it's so.
Well, you did pretty well after that, didn't you?
Yes, it was better because I got some traction then up in Lake Placid. And I needed to because the next competition... I should meet Torge Tokle then.
Well, Torge Tokle's all right, isn't he? A Norwegian also.
Yes.
But you won against Torge the Eastern Championship, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And after that, the National Championship. So standing here beside me, folks, in Canada, is a Norwegian who is National Ski Jumping Champion of the United States. I'd just like to find out, of course, we know from the newsreels and so on that you really come down that slide pretty fast. What does it feel like when you're flying through the air with the greatest of ease up over the treetops there?
Oh, I think that's the most delighted and thrilling feeling you can ever have.
I'll take your word for it. Well, I think it was swell of your commanding officer to give you permission to enter those meets, don't you?
It certainly was, and I was very glad myself. Also, to be able to cable up to him that we had taken a cake, because he told me to do so. And if I didn't, I had to wash or clean planes for the duration of the war.
But you're not cleaning planes, you're getting your wings, aren't you?
Yes, and now I'm training for a bigger competition. And the prizes is the biggest that ever can be given to a human being, the liberty of our country.
You're right, Olaf. Thank you very much, Ola. Fox, whom have we now?
Okay, Warren, right behind us here is a straight, clear-eyed young man, almost tripped over. Way over here. About 20 years old and with a twinkle in his eye, Folks, I want you to meet student pilot Otto.
You have got a twinkle in your eye. Don't look at me like that.
Yes, you have. Otto, first of all, have you time for dances and the girls here in Toronto?
Oh, I regret to say it's very short, but I hope to get anyway.
Do you have any girl in Norway?
Oh, no, I regret to say no.
Well, you haven't?
No.
You like girls, don't you?
Oh, of course I do.
Well, what's wrong, Otto?
Oh, you see, the work down there in the camp takes a lot of time, though.
I know that you men do work, and I know the determination with which you do it, and I can understand that. You lived in Norway a little while, at least, under Nazi occupation, didn't you?
About a year, I think.
About a year. What's it like? What's life like in Nazi-occupied country?
Oh, when I should characterize it, I think you would say it's like going around with a stone around your heart. That is what I mean?
I do. I was just thinking. That really struck me. That's right. What is this passive resistance now that you Norwegians have used so effectively to upset the Germans?
We could say that it's sabotage and being cool against them and laugh at them.
Yeah.
Be sarcastically, all that stuff, you know?
You just can't break your spirit, is that right?
No, that's right.
How about, could you illustrate a little bit what, I don't know what passive resistance is. I've never had to do it. But how can you illustrate it?
Oh, yes, I think I can, just to show the Americans how to do it.
All right.
All right, if you say you take about 5,000 German prisoners into the Curtis plant there in Buffalo.
Yeah.
I think no American pilot would like to fly those Curtis afterwards.
No, if you had to have prisoners like that working on planes, I dare say that you wouldn't like it. So that's what you do. They put you to work, and then it takes two men to watch one man to see that he does his work. And he doesn't do so well. Did you escape the hard way or the easy way in getting to America?
I would say the common way.
Oh, the common way.
Yes.
Well, I happen to know that both ways are the hard way, and the North Sea, it takes real brave men to do it. We've read all those stories. The underground helped you out,
yes,
didn't it?
We call it secret organizations.
What other work does a secret organization do besides helping men to get from Norway over here?
They organize what we call the home front.
Oh,
that's
yes.
The boys, everybody there at home fighting, I would say, just as, or rather, a harder fight than we are fighting here.
Fighting just as hard as you.
Yes.
The home front is
right.
Very hard.
Well,
was it hard, talking about hard, was it hard for you to leave the home folks without saying goodbye, just slip away?
Oh, it wouldn't be human for me to say that it wasn't hard, but, you know, there's something called the duty.
Duty is higher than anything else, isn't
all
it,
right,
in
yes,
your own self-respect. I wonder if you men in Little Norway here have any way of knowing whether the folks at home are all right.
No, after America went into the war, there are no chances in that way.
And so you just hope,
that... Yes, we know they are carrying on.
That's right. Well, thank you very much, Otto. We're glad to have had you. Okay, Warren Howe.
Thank you, Parks. And ladies and gentlemen, this is indeed a pleasure and something rare on Vox Pop. The young lady I have beside me here, you know, we don't usually have pretty young ladies like this one. Her name is Gert. She's about 20, and she's a nurse at Little Norway. She's a lovely blonde, beautiful complexion. You know, a Hollywood talent scout would sign her up in a minute. Are there any more at home like you, Gert?
Oh, a lot much prettier.
I can see where after the war, there'll be a peaceful invasion of Norway by a lot of eager young men. Gert, tell us, how long were you there under the occupation?
Oh, about a year.
How did you escape?
Oh, I skied over to Sweden, over the mountains to Sweden.
Well, you look pretty young to get a passport visa. How did you manage that?
Oh, they wouldn't give it to me, so I had to marry.
You had to marry?
Yes, I had to find somebody who was willing to marry me for the duration.
Well, that was easy. Did you do it?
Yes, certainly. I married, and then I had no money, so I had to take a job, and I got a job with him. Family going to America, and here I am.
We're very happy about that. Of course, you haven't seen your husband since.
Oh, yes, I have. So 4 months ago, he came walking into the camp, and I said hello, and he said hello, and now we're very good friends.
Good. To go back to Norway again, we hear that life under the German occupation isn't very pleasant for pretty young girls.
Oh, no, certainly not. It's impossible for a girl to go out alone.
Well, did you have any experiences?
Oh, yes, a few. One night I was walking home from work. I came through the street. It was very dark. It was about 10 o'clock in the evening. There came a car along, and I knew it had to be a German car because no other car could drive. And it stopped beside me, and there were a few officers in it, and they wanted me to come into the car. And I said, no, I won't. And then one of them pulled my arm and told me to go in, and I pulled again, and I ran into a hole.
Well, you got away then.
Yes, I
did. An American girl would have slapped him.
Oh, no, I couldn't do that because then they would have put me in the concentration camp with them.
Well, what would have happened to you there in the concentration camp?
Oh, they would stand, as they did with a few other girls. They would have put me on that boat while it's alive.
Well, what do you mean?
Oh, it's a boat that's supposed to be a Red Cross ship, and it's going along the coast and going into every harbor, and German soldiers go on board, and girls have to move them.
Well, we're going to stop all of that. What are you going to do after the war, Gert?
Oh, then I'm going to get really married and have children and live peacefully ever after.
Thank you very much, Gert. And now, folks, here it comes, the Bromo Seltzer Experience of the Week. Take it away, Ernest Chappell.
Thanks, Warren. Well, friends, this letter comes from Mr. Edwin L. Keith of Niagara Falls, New York. He writes,
my wife and I both work in war camps doing our best to help Uncle Sam with his tremendous job. I run the shipping department and she's a pharmacist for one of the large chemical companies. Besides which, we have a home and a young son to care for. Well, recently, when our young son became ill, you can imagine how hard we worked and what little sleep we got. The lack of sleep and constant worry caused us both to suffer from bad headaches. We didn't know what to do. Until suddenly I remembered all the good things I'd heard about Bromo Seltzer. We both tried it, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you what quick relief we got. Thanks to Bromo Seltzer, we were able to continue on the job without missing even an hour's work. Our boy is now back at school fully recovered. But believe me, there is a bottle of Bromo Seltzer on the medicine shelf, and there always will be.
Well, thank you, Edwin L. Keith. And friends, I sure hope you try Bromo Seltzer the next time you get a headache. Because I'm here to tell you there's just nothing better.
Now, folks, just for a moment, we want you to meet a Norwegian lieutenant who fought the Germans during the invasion of his country. We'll introduce him simply as Lieutenant Keir. Is that pretty correct to pronounce it?
That's fine.
Lieutenant, do you remember April 9th, 1940?
Yes, I do, and I won't forget it easily either. The Germans invaded Norway.
Oh, that was when they invaded. How many German planes came over in your sector?
I heard afterwards it was about 70, but certainly it looked like 500 to us that morning.
Oh, boy. And how many planes did you have in your squadron if you go up after them?
Five.
Just five?
Just five.
Were you in one of those planes?
Yes, I was lucky enough to get one of them.
Oh, you got one of the German planes?
Yes, I got the Norwegian plane first, I mean, myself, and then I got the German all right, yes.
How many Germans did your small squadron of five get that day?
Yes, we got five German planes, and
with your five?
Yes.
Out of the 70?
Mm-hmm.
There was some real tough fighting around Oslo in that section.
Yes, for an hour or so, and then all the Norwegian planes were damaged, and they had to land in different places.
What happened to your plane?
Well, so a fire on the ground after landing. Uh-huh. No more.
And after that, what happened to you? Where'd you go?
After the country, I got a small plane and proceeded to northern Norway. Got orders to proceed to England and get more planes. Got a lot of other Norwegians and come back and continue the fighting.
Did you go back to Norway?
No, we never got that far because the war in Norway collapsed before we got back.
I see. Then you came to Little Norway as an instructor, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And you are teaching your fellow countrymen to fly now?
Yes.
Have you told them the story of how to down a German plane and all like that?
Well, I tried to teach them.
I'll bet you have. How about the young ladies here in Toronto? Did you meet any pretty ones?
Oh, I met a lot. And especially the one I married a few months ago.
Oh, you married a Toronto girl. Well, congratulations to both of you, and thank you very much. We wish we had more time to talk to you, but here's Warren Hull.
Thank you, Clark. Thank you. And we have here, folks, a young fellow by the name of Tor, who's about 22. He's red-headed, freckle-faced. He looks as though he could be an O'Sullivan. Are you an O'Sullivan?
Oh, no. As far as I know,
I'm 100% Norwegian.
We're sure of that now. What were you doing in Norway when the war broke out?
I was in the Air Force. I joined that in 1938.
As a pilot?
No, I was doing signals duty.
Well, how did you escape? Across the North Sea, too?
Oh, no. I had to make my way across Sweden, Russia, Japan, and came finally to Little Norway.
Oh, the hard way.
Oh, no, that's the easy way. Hard way is across the North Sea.
Aha. Well, what did you do when you arrived here?
I was training here in Little Norway for a few months, and then I was sent overseas.
What did you do there?
I was signals officer in Norwegian squadrons in England.
Well, I suppose some of your pals are pilots in the actual fighting there?
Oh, yes, that's right. And I know quite many of them. And we very often when I came back from the North Sea or from France with a plane full of bullet holes or sentence and never returned.
What are you doing here now?
I came back here to Little Norway to be a pilot.
Well, you want to get into the actual fighting?
Yes, I want to be able to give it back to your Germans myself.
Ah, the boy. That's the spirit we know of all Norwegian men.
Yes, I know a man. He said to a German officer, I would rather work for 10,000 Germans than for one Englishman.
Now, wait a minute. I want to get that straight. He told a German officer that he'd rather work for 10,000 Germans than one Englishman?
Yes, he's a grave digger.
That's good. That's the third, and thank you very much, Tor. Now, folks, in just a moment, Parks will be back with another interesting member of the Royal Norwegian Air Force. But first, here's a reminder for you that you will appreciate.
Now, friends, don't forget, the next time your head aches and your nerves are on edge and your stomach's all upset, do this. Step into your nearest drugstore and ask for Bromo Seltzer. Your druggist will mix you one in a jiffy, or better still, get a small trial bottle to take home or to the office. Use it only as directed on the label. Either way, it costs you only 10 cents to try Bromo Seltzer, and believe me, you'll never know what quick, effective relief Bromo Seltzer can give until you try it.
Too bad I can't see a thing. Now, here's an officer of the Norwegian Air Force who fought as a pilot through the 62 days of the Norwegian War. And he's now doing important work in headquarters at Little Norway. We'll present him simply as Lieutenant Edward. Lieutenant, we're glad to have you with us. And I've heard you speak in the last 2 days some very good English, but I imagine occasionally you have a little difficulty with it.
Oh, yes, we have. We are learning English already in the public school, and other times when you are coming out in the world, you never can escape any place from the English language. But still we have some difficulties, and I just remember a story from our commanding officer, which he loved to tell, that he had been here quite a long time, and he was up for inspection in a camp here, and start in his very best English to talk with a little sweet Canadian farmer girl in the kitchen there, and asked her how he liked to work in the Norwegian, and then she turned around and said, I'm sorry, sir, but I don't understand your Norwegian.
After all,
it may be that he's the only one who's not falling for the Canadian girls.
Oh, I can understand how anybody would. Tell me, Lieutenant, you, of course, had to escape from Norway, too. How long did it take you from the time you left there to you got to the United States?
Well, about 4 months.
That's quite a long time, isn't it?
Well, if you think about it, that it really is traveling from the darkness of the Middle Age to the 20th century in the modern life. I think it's pretty fast, anyway.
Yes, I believe you're right about that. I'm interested in one or two things about Little Norway. Who's paying for all the training that I see there, all those planes, the expense that you have in connection with it?
Well, everything there is paid for, and our government is paying there, and they are able to do it through our merchant marine. That's a little funny story, that the country that has only one-third of the population of New York has the number four largest merchant marine in the world.
Your population about 3 million, a little less, isn't it?
Yes, a little less than 3 million.
Uh-huh.
And this merchant marine had been sailing the whole war in the Battle of Atlantic, and the money they earned from that they are using to pay the Norwegian different forces, the army and the navy and the air force.
Mm-hmm. So the sailors really are the front line, aren't they?
Yes, and that's because we feel special to the sailors, because they give us the opportunity to fight under the Norwegian flag. And to show that, we also have small funds up here. The boys are giving themselves.
We have talked to merchant marines of many lands, and we know how brave those men are. Lieutenant, what is life like in a conquered country?
Well, Norway isn't conquered. It's occupied.
I beg your pardon. You're right. There is a world of difference, isn't there, Lieutenant?
Yes, and especially with this modern occupation, it isn't only a military occupation, but it's going into all things in the nation, and you're very short, after you have discovered these things, you feel yourself something like to be into a stomach of a snake. You try to absorb you completely.
Trying to absorb you, trying to force you.
Yes, to say it short, it means that they try to change the whole nation, your whole point of view of life. I think I can say that as short as possible in the way we perhaps all feel that your mother, and I think all your mothers, told you when you were a boy that the important thing in the world was to serve people instead of ruling them. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the thing we are fighting for today and are willing to die for.
I can understand that, and as well put, Lieutenant. Is life in Norway disorganized?
Well, I think it's absolutely contrary today. You know that we, in Norway, we are sorry to say it, but we like to say it just as a warning. We have a few traitors, and I am afraid we will find them all over the world. But I am only one person of the whole population, and we know that because all the boys who are coming out can tell us how many there are. And we have them on long lists, and we are afraid that we couldn't come back easy, quick enough to take them.
You are really determined, you men. You properly said that Norway is not conquered. I guess being conquered would be just about the worst thing that could happen to a human being, Miss Turner.
Well, I'm afraid the worst thing that can happen is to feel ashamed of yourself. And that's exactly this way you will feel, whether you are in a vision or anyone else, that you can't do anything else today than to fight for the ideals we all have common. We know all that they are right, but we have to do our utmost to be able to win this war. But if we do that, we know already today that we will win it.
That spirit can't help. Lieutenant Jensen, you and your comrades here in Little Norway have asked us not to follow our usual Vox Pop custom of presenting individual gifts to those who appear on the program, as I said a while ago. Instead, you wish us to make our gift to the Common Fund for Airplanes, to which all Norwegians are contributing. Well, now, we are glad to do that. But nevertheless, we want each of you who have appeared on this program to have a little souvenir of your appearance. So we have for each of you a silver cigarette lighter engraved with your initials and your slogan, "For a Common Cause." Now, here's the way the men of Little Norway wanted their gifts handled. Here is Bromo Seltzer's check made payable to your fund, Wings for Norway.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. And thank you. I'd like to thank you, not only from ourselves here in Little Norway, but from Norwegian all over the world. And now we would like all of us to do something for you. Mm. And if Mr. Hull will lead us, we should like to sing for you our national anthem, Ja vi elsker.
I'd be greatly honored to, Lieutenant.
Ja vi
returns to the United States for a broadcast from deep in the heart of Texas, when we'll visit one of the most famous educational institutions in America, Texas A&M. The following week, we'll broadcast from Corpus Christi. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.